I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. And we have our three-man weave back. Unfortunately, Tron Carter is out. The spicy curmudgeon ate some bad meat or something tonight and had to bow out late. So we've got a much better replacement. We have SB Nation's Brendan Porath, and then also Scratch's DJ Pyhowski. Welcome on.
Hey, man. What's up? I wouldn't, it's an honor to be here. I wouldn't claim that I can fill in the take shoes of one Tron Carter, though. It's an honor.
A lot of people in the corners of the internet saying Tron might be suffering low T right now. Just low takes, heading into a big week. It's kind of upsetting to hear. Need him to issue a statement to see what's going on.
You know, since the flip-flopping, the fatwa lifting, and then the fatwa placing on Kuchar, he seems to be a lost man.
He needs to start seeing some putts go in, I think. Just kind of get his feet back under him.
He was telling me he's kind of been bogged down with real-world stuff, but he did find time to parachute in and give his take on the Nike Blade collar lineup for the week, which I appreciate. Just couldn't go untaked, you know.
Andy, can I just say I'm excited and a little nervous to eventually find out what kind of hackers are listening to this podcast as we record it to see who's gonna infiltrate your feed next.
You know, it's been a bad week for the pod, bad 10 days. I apologize to all the listeners. You know, we're having a little internal issue here. I use Squarespace, and they have no clue what's going on, but I keep getting infiltrated by other Squarespace customers.
The leakers are the real story here.
Internal issue, huh?
So after today, you know, I know how to fix it now, but today's, I mean, I rarely get very upset with people, but I sent a strongly worded email to Squarespace, who doesn't have a helpline. Otherwise, I would have been on that line with giving some choice words to the support people over there. But yeah, sorry. Well, hopefully, we'll have it all straightened out here. I think they're working on it. They've escalated the situation. But
infiltrating my golf takes, you know.
On to better things, you know. As a Bulls fan, I sit here and you know I just wonder how. Cavs fans are doing. What's up with Cavs Nation, Porath?
Oh, we're doing fine. I mean, it's a crooked Warriors team adding, you know, tipping the balance in just kind of a dishonest way. And it is what it is. You know, we have our championship after 52 years. I can't complain. We ruined their attempt at 16-0. And I saw Sean Martin just tweeted something about it. The Warriors adding Durant is like Rory paying money to play from the white tees, from the forward tees, which is a take I didn't know Martin had in him. But I think Rory is like, you know, too much credit because we would have wiped the Warriors out without KD. It's more like, you know, Troy Merritt or somebody paying to play the forward tees. Upgrading.
It'll be an interesting offseason, see what happens. I think in the end, it's going to be a bad thing for the NBA. I listened to a really interesting Howard Beck, Zach Lowe podcast about how, you know, it's going to hurt the local ratings. And I know I'm a huge Bulls fan. I'm less interested because we have absolutely no chance of competing.
Yeah. So it wasn't fun. I mean, I think that's like a legit not hot take, you know, that there is. It's a legitimate concern. So,
all right. So, DJ, what's new in Jax? You know, moving?
Not much. I've been kind of bouncing around a lot. We've been shooting a travel series for Avis. So I was out in Denver with Shane Bacon and hashtag Chad, a couple friends of the pod, shooting some golf travel stuff, and then was in New Orleans last week with Bacon and the Takesmith Sean Martin. So I actually haven't seen much of Jack's recently, but back, glad to be back. It's steamy. Played a little golf today. It was nice and sweaty out there, and it's significantly warmed up since you guys were here.
It's just beautiful in Chicago. My depressing, low energy vibes are gone. You know, it's but you know, speaking of Midwest, you know, weather.
Good segue.
The U.S. Open at Erin Hills, just a couple hours north of me. Got a little rain yesterday, and I think a little bit more rain on the way tomorrow. But here in the course is handling the rain really well. What are you guys most excited about for the week?
Brennan, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think just seeing a new venue, like you said, all the natural land movement, I think is the term you used, and I've heard quite often watching all the coverage. I think it's always interesting to see a new venue and the drama that surrounds the U.S. Open. I think sometimes it can get a little tedious to watch it, which I thought, you know, and follow it because it is like, you know, just par golf or hanging on. So I like the drama that surrounds it, whether it's rules drama or players screaming about the course and the USGA trying to justify the course. And I think kind of there's always that uneasiness going into a new venue like this, especially after Chambers Bay. It doesn't seem like we're going to approach anything like that, but I'm always interested to see players complaining and screaming and yelling, and that's always of intrigue to someone who thrives off of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. I'm most excited about the venue, I think, just because, you know, I have liked a lot of what we've seen at the US Open the last 5 years or so. We can talk about this later, but I really like Chambers Bay. I thought it was awesome. And I think that this year kind of just feels like the best of kind of like they finally hit like the right formula and kind of the best of a lot of these different things. I think it's like a unique golf course. It's not necessarily like they're playing it on a, you know, real linksy place, but it's got a lot of those kinds of vibes, but with a lot of kind of the soft-ish American kind of style of golf. I don't know. It just feels really like, it feels like there's a lot of kind of converging trends that really like, you know, have all kind of met up into this same place this week, which I'm into.
Since both you guys like yelling, I mean, I think we got to dive right into Fescue Gate 2017. I mean, I have never seen grass talk so much about than the last 2 days.
I think it's one of those things where it's just a really easy, like, argument to understand. Like, the rough was there, and then they cut it down. And so it's, like, easy for people to talk about and, like, get really worked up about. But, you know, I know, Andy, we were talking earlier today, like, they only cut it on, what, 4 holes?
I mean, Digest devoted a whole reporter to it, following around the mowers. And then saying RIP to the fescue. It's like they cut like probably 2% of the total fescue on the golf course, or maybe even less, maybe 1%.
But I love it. That's what the US Open's for. It's just like getting worked up. I wrote something today. I was like, the USGA mowed the lawn and everyone lost their mind. It's basically it, you know. It's like we talk about grass and like, you know, at Pinehurst, we're talking about wire grass and native sandy areas, like all these terms of art that you just never hear the other 51 weeks of the year. You hear a million times during US Open week, and people just start screaming about fescue. It's fantastic.
Oh, man. I mean, the overspray drama with Shackelford and like every superintendent weighing in. I mean, it's just been unbelievable. I will say, you know, I did hear some players on Sunday. I was walking around up there, and they were complaining about how thick it was in certain spots.
But I mean, what do you? So let's get to it then. Like, what is it too thick if the fairways are 60 yards wide, like Rory's saying?
Here's my issue with it is that, like, in championship golf, I believe that the further you miss, the more you should be penalized. And in this situation, the thickest rough is the rough right off, like, the primary cutter rough. So 5 yards off the fairway is the thickest rough. And then it gets thinner 10 yards in, 15 yards in. So that to me is an issue where if I just barely miss my target, especially if, you know, you're trying to hit it down the left side of the fairway, you miss by 10 yards, you know, you are severely more penalized than somebody that misses by 20 yards.
That makes sense. And I think that, you know, from everything I've read, I mean, that kind of sounds like it was a mistake if that was the case, right? Like they didn't really want that to be that way anyways, kind of the way that turned out. So if that's why they were kind of knocking it down, I think then that's a good move for what they're doing. I mean, I think that makes sense, but I don't think that they would, I don't think they've changed it because people were complaining or anything like that. I mean, I was pretty checked out of Twitter today, but I'm guessing that some people had that take.
Everyone had that take. Brandel was on like the coverage tonight saying like Nah basically caused this, you know, saying it was all, you know, Kevin Nah is like deserves a byline for this championship from here on out. It's like I couldn't believe it. I mean, I think it was only four holes, but it is like dramatic to see them just wholesale changing the course and hauling away these like truckloads of grass.
Well, so Andy, what do you think? So go into your favorite two words, width and angles. You know, when they're moving these pins around and like you're making, you know, you're making one side of the fairway so much more of a premium than the other, you know, how does that make you feel? Like, I kind of feel like if you're really trying to hit the left side of the fairway to get a good birdie chance, bringing that gnarly ass fescue into play is like kind of awesome.
Oh yeah, it's totally odd. I think like you can need to be, but there's enough width at this course, and then the other thing is the natural land movement. I mean, so like there will be sides of fairways that have like severe undulation, and other sides that are, you know, flatter. So you'll have this risk reward where one side of the fairway isn't necessarily right, and the greens are really big. So you've got these massive greens where a back left pin. And then, and you couple that with the five different tees they can play the holes from. And the flexibility is unbelievable here in terms of the ways they can play holes. And, I mean, Spieth hit on it today in his press conference, talking about how it's almost hard to prepare because there's so many different ways that the holes can be played. So I think that's one of the cool things. And I think there, I mean, from what I saw when I was out there, there could be as many as three drivable par fours, and if they set it up a certain way, the second hole, if they play way up on the fourth hole, which the fourth hole could be just the ejector hole of all ejector holes when they put the pin on the right side. The green, it is so nasty, and anybody that shoots at that pin is, you know, if they don't hit a perfect shot, they could be playing like ping pong back and forth. I mean, one of the caddies I was talking to that's from Erin Hills was like, when the pin's right, you need to aim at the very far left edge of the green and just let it funnel in to the middle. So it's interesting. That'll be an interesting hole to watch. And then
the flexibility you're talking about kind of reminds me of another Midwestern course, Rich Harvest Farms.
Yes, there are many tee boxes there. There's some, I found, you know, one thing I held back on, you know, I made a truce at the end, at the end to stop on that golf course. I found an abandoned tee shot, a tee box, and I couldn't figure out where it went. And I took a picture, but I haven't ever posted it. So on to, you know, a course with some width and strategy and options.
So do you think those options could, you know, sometimes USGA tries to get like a little too cute, outthinks themselves? Do you think there's too many options to get in trouble?
Well, I mean, I think this is what you described at the beginning of the the podcast is the beauty of the U.S. Open, like watching the USGA like fumble like different things and everybody overreact to everything they do. So this course should set up quite well for that.
I mean, but by and large, you know, this fescue gate aside, like, I don't think we've seen, this is an annual thing. Like, whether it was, I don't know, I was looking today at his, like, some of the past posts I've done, like Lee McCoy, like dribbling his ball down the fairway at Chambers Bay. Remember, it was like bouncing waist high. And like, Graham McDowell finding like fake clumps of grass in the like native areas at Pinehurst in 14. It's like fake news, fake grass. It's just these big, like huge clumps, like, and just picked it up like it was like a hairball. There's just like always this social media outroar. And if like the worst we get is like Kevin Na yelling into his phone, like, then that's not that bad a week, I think.
Whose video is better, Na or Westwood?
They're both good. I thought not. I'm team Nah.
I just loved how you, the last thing you expected was somebody to crawl out of the fescue.
Maybe the best way I heard this put, I think, was your boy Michael Clayton was talking about it, and like it kind of reminds me of the par argument and the fact that par is kind of just a number that people freak out about. But if this fescue was a water hazard, like literally nobody would even think twice about it or mention it. And just the fact that it's not is like, you know, just makes everybody lose their mind.
Yeah, Rory said that today. It's like if they put, you know, red stakes and red lines up the side of it, like we wouldn't be getting Instagram videos about it. You
know? Right. Yeah.
Hey, you know, if golfers, like, they're going to complain about something because most of them have so much confidence that, like, nothing is ever their fault that goes wrong on the golf course. So, you know, that's part of why they're the best in the world, is that they never hit a bad shot. It's, you know, the USGA's damn fault that the fescue is there.
Doesn't that mess you up for, like, the whole week, though, if, like, that's what you're focusing on going into the week?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that couldn't have helped Kevin Na's preparation that, like, all of a sudden he's in on all these headlines.
I also think that was mostly a joke, you know? And it probably just got completely misconstrued, as things often do in society today.
So Kevin Na as like a analogy for all that's wrong with society, I like it, you know.
That's shining good. The light. Yeah.
So where do you think, like, I was watching some of like the flyovers and Nablo and stuff like that, and I heard like Bubba drove number two. That sounds like a cool hole. It just seems like there are a lot of options going on. Where do you think it could get away from them? Seems like nine. I'm intrigued by nine, that like wedge shot, if it could get a little crazy. Those pins.
Nine could be like a double or a six. You know, somebody can make big numbers there. The par five 14th and then the par four 15th could be big swings. Like, I think the 14th is like a longer par five. If for the long hitters, it's a really tough driving hole if you want to hit driver, because there's some bunkers that shrink the fairway. And there's a centerline bunker, which I love, and it makes, you know, two small fairways. And then, you know, there's like, you know, they basically give you this layup. It's like, you know, a longer hitter will be like a 7-iron. Like, you can hit this 7-iron here, and you have a wedge in, but it's semi-blind, you know. Or you can go for this crazy shot in two, and if you don't hit it in the exact right slope, everything just funnels like way down to the right, and you're left with like this short-sighted pitch shot up a 50-foot mountain. So that hole is really cool, and there's some very long fescue that kind of cuts up the kind of the middle. So some more thick fescue that you could lose a ball in. So that one's really cool, and then 15's that short par four that they've shown a lot of flyovers of, where you've got a lot of bunkers. I think I'm guessing most players are going to hit a 4-iron. I was thinking about writing up a little feature about it. Guessing they'll hit a 4-iron right and then just take the free wedge. But you might see some guys, you know, trying to drive it, depending on where they put the tee. But if I were playing it, I'd just hit 4-iron wedge every day.
Yeah, it sounds like I was watching some highlights of the AM. Like Cantlay, I guess, blew it. Like he hit an 8-iron off of one of the tee into like a, well, I think that center, one of the bunkers in the middle of the fairway. Like it's sometimes laying up or, you know, taking, being safe off the tee can get you in trouble. Like he hit an 8-iron some ridiculous distance that carried into this fairway bunker.
Yeah, that whole like fairway runs really hard to the right into Festo, yeah, too. So like, yeah, you can hit a good shot. Like I was talking to a player who said, "Oh, you can hit a really good shot here, and it could still go in the fescue." So
I think you should. I think you were talking about it in maybe your preview thing, but I think one of the things I'm most excited about too is all the bunkering and the fact that like there's basically no flat lies out there in a lot of these bunkers. How there's so much slope inside the bunker, which is awesome. I love that. I love watching guys hit like weird, crouching, kind of like uncomfortable shots above their feet, shots below their feet. Like that's the best. And then just seeing how close they put it most of the time. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. There's like a bunker, you know, like I've never seen where like you could visibly see like a, like almost like when you see like a big hump or a roll in a green, you could see these in bunkers. So like in the middle of a bunker, there's sometimes like a uphill and downhill undulation right in the middle of it. So that's kind of interesting. I think a lot of the bunkers also, like especially with the fairway ones, they're less penal the closer you are to the fairway. So the further you miss into them to the right, the more penal they get, which is really cool. I think that's a interesting, unique little design twist for championship golf, where they get a little bit tougher the further you get into the bunker. So I'm excited. I think the course is going to stay pretty firm and fast from what I've gathered. It's drained really well. The greens still have a lot of bite after a good amount of rain. And, you know, I think that's the only concern I would have is if it rains too much, that it softens up, because then it will really kind of reduce. I think it's unbelievable design because short straight hitters legitimately have a chance. Everybody just looks at the yardage, but it plays so short. Not like so short, but it does not play long. It's lots of downhill tee shots.
Can I ask you a would you rather?
Yeah.
Would you rather get a ton of rain and not have it play firm and fast, or have Phil play? It's either or.
I'd rather have Phil play. I mean,
you love firm and fast, though.
Oh, no, I'd rather have firm and fast. I thought the question was, like, I misunderstood the question. I thought it was going to rain or Phil was going to play, and it was one or the other.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing.
Oh, I'm just an idiot. See?
No, it's okay. It was a very complex question.
It's far too much for my brain to understand. I'd rather have it be firm and fast than Phil play. Yeah, I'm going to get lit up about this. But
that's all right.
Just gives my boy Ernie another chance to catch Phil on the career majors list.
That's true. No, but what you were saying is I found it interesting reading your like primer of the course, basically. Seemed like a voice in the wilderness all alone, talking about how you didn't necessarily think, you know, like everyone keeps saying bomber's paradise, long hitter, long hitter, long hitter. You're more of like, hey, like the uneven lies might make this more like, it might be more of like the best approach game is the people who win it, and the short and straight guys can still hang.
I think like any US Open, you have to hit the ball really well to win. Like almost any golf tournament, you have to hit the ball well to win. I think what you'll see is like, I would look at guys that are high on strokes gained that aren't necessarily long. You know, like Bubba's always in the top five because he just hits it so far. But find guys that drive it really well who are also really good iron players. Because you see it at Augusta, you know, like Spieth plays so well there because he's so good at hitting off uneven lies.
Yeah.
And I like that about Spieth this week, is that because it's a little wider, it lets more drivers into it. You know, like that's another aspect of it I think is going overlooked, because it's a little wider. It, you know, like when the fairway's 20 yards wide, everybody's going to miss fairways. And that's what kills the short hitters, is when they're hitting out of rough, you know, and they're not hitting it out of the fairway. And that's why U.S. Opens typically don't, you know, short hitters don't win them, because everybody misses five fairways. Like, you know, like a short but really good driver of the golf ball could hit 14 of 14 fairways here. Like, and that's legitimately in play for anybody that drives the ball well. So from there, you can attack and you can play well. Like, I mean, I think the wind is really going to be the big question. Like, if the wind blows, that's when scores will go up. But if it doesn't blow, you know, like early morning rounds are going to, you know, the draw, it's going to play more like a British Open, where, you know, or an Open Championship, where the draw could be a legitimate factor.
That's what I think I was saying at first, is like, it's kind of this like confluence of all these factors that are like the best parts of all the other majors almost. And it seems like we're going to get like a lot of them this week, all in one, which is really cool.
Yeah, Spieth said that exact thing at his Kapalua, the home of Rolf, press conference at the top of the year. He's like, I succeed at Augusta, I succeed at the Plantation course, I think, because, you know, I think a lot of the modern players, the guys coming up, don't really hit it as well off different lies and uneven terrain as well as I did, which is weird for a Texas player to say, you think, but... yeah, he said that at the top of the year. So maybe he's the guy to go for this week.
I'm going to slide in and take the Spieth pick first before anybody else says it.
Damn
it. I put it in that course thought. So I put a gif of Spieth just...
Saw it.
I think that's like one of the best design tricks of how to really... create difficulty for the great player without, you know, stressing out the average player.
What other courses are like that besides those two come to mind? But I'm just
William Flynn did a lot on his courses. So Cherry Hills, there's a course I played of his, Rolling Green, that like you're never hitting off an even lie, and it always seems to be like a fade lie to hit into a draw green, and it just drives you nuts. But what it does is it really separates the great ball strikers. So I'm, you know, sitting there hitting high fans into draw pins and grinding for pars, but like somebody that's really good is just hitting them right at the pin still. So I think you know, you got Kapalua, you have to have some land movement to do it. It's hard to do it with a dead flat site, and this place has just, I guess, the story of it being like some sort of glacier. I'm sure somebody's going to do, you know, one of these telecasts.
Glaciers.
Yeah. The glacial movement and blockage or whatever happened here. You know, it's an interesting study. You know, we've now touched a little bit on Spieth, but, you know, I think something that's an interesting narrative that's going on is that McIlroy has been kind of stuck at five majors. And you've got this whole, and he's got the, you know, the stranglehold on generation's best player of this post-Tiger generation. But you've got all these other guys that are lurking that could go on a run and get to him because of this, you know, almost 3-year stall he's had now. So, you know, I'd love to hear what you guys think about, you know, some of the other big guns and, you know, who could be the guy that could get close to his major count.
I mean, I think that, like, I think Spieth is the guy in my head, but of course that I'm saying that as, you know, Dustin Johnson's the number one player in the world who looks pretty much unbeatable every time he has teed it up over the past year or so here. But I mean, I think Spieth is the guy that, like, in my mind, I think when I was watching him in 2015 or even before that, probably, like, kind of when he was a rookie, I mean, it's easy to get sucked into the narrative of kind of like, oh, he makes every putt and blah, blah, blah. And like, I think when you get sucked into that, you kind of start to think like, okay, well, that's going to dry up eventually. And like, he's going to kind of drop off. And I think what we've seen just over the past few years, as people have gotten deeper into his game and just watched him more closely and watch him when he struggles, more importantly, and watch him when he plays well, it's that like, that's not the case, and that he is like an all world ball striker too. And like, I think what I see from him, I mean, I don't know, he just makes me excited about the fact that he contends at like, he contends at every venue. He kind of like just has all these different ways to get it done. And like, that is, I think that's what impresses me the most. But, you know, I don't know. I think just the fact that he's got, what, 10 years on Dustin Johnson, 9 years, something like that, is the fact that makes me lean towards him. But I think I'm just like freakish, you know, talent of like being able to just kind of take over for a decade. Like, Dustin's the guy that has the tools to do that. But I don't know. It's kind of a rambling answer.
I think, I mean, he's got to get,
or Bryson.
The Artiste. DeShangelo. He's definitely gets the most airtime of anybody. I think, you know, he's at zero right now, but doesn't Rom got to be thrown into this from what we've seen so far with, like, you know, like DJ was just talking about different styles. He handled himself fine at Colonial, or whether it's, you know, Austin or Torrey, it kind of doesn't matter where he plays. Putting, driving, you know, iron game, it seems to be pretty solid through the bag. You know, I just,
yeah,
it's kind of, I think like he's someone, if you're Rory, you might be, you know, thinking like, that's the guy for the next era. It's hard to argue with DJ, Dustin Johnson, that is, being, I think, the most immediate threat. But there's that age thing. Like, he just seems, DJ seems like the guy who could win, you know, a major every year for 4 straight years, you know, at least get one a year. And, but I think like Rom is the kind of the biggest threat right now. He would scare me if I was looking for a guy to dethrone Rory, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, now that you've touched into Rom, so do you put him as, you know, the next first time major? I mean, even though I asked this really because a Japanese reporter sat in that press room all day and asked the same question to every player, you know, asking if Hideki could win this week. All of them said yes.
So yes. I love that. I love that the question was always, do you think the number 4 player in the world could win this week? Yeah, it's not like some nuanced thing. It's just like, can he win? Is he okay at golf? He's number 4 in the world.
I wish that golf would get some sort of like performance artist up there that would just like basically lean into all this stuff and kind of have like a handshake agreement with every other player that, like, just so you know, like, I'm just messing with you guys. I'm just kind of spewing this off. But like, when somebody asks that question, do you think he can win? Just say, you know, no, I don't. I don't think he has what it takes. I think he's destined for just a life of, you know, just miserable shortcoming. Next question. But until that day comes, I guess we'll have to keep suffering the same pointless hypotheticals.
The monotony. It's, yeah. The whole press conference thing needs a major shakeup. I'm so out of it.
I parked on the couch today and just watched the whole cycle. I was having a field day with it. But I'm very kind of like deep in the game, just know who's asking the questions and kind of having fun with the bias and fake news angles of some of these guys are throwing out there. It's pretty interesting.
You had the Japanese woman asking about if Hideki could win, and then you had another guy asking about Wisconsin culture every single time. Like, tell me about what you think about Wisconsin people, you know, like, and it's just there, like, was, you're all just writing a story and getting these quotes for this story. It's like,
that's the bad part is having the story 90% written and just saying like, okay, cool, I just need some quotes I can plug into these holes. It's like, I mean, that's, I don't know, I guess that's how you gotta, like, do it on deadline, I know, a lot of times, but like, it's just, that's how you wind up with these like milquetoast kind of
you know,
like asking Rory about Wisconsin, he's like, I don't know, it's a state and I've been here a couple times to play golf. Like, I can't, what insight can he actually,
the people
find?
Are nice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I think, you know, with the NBA, how they have like a ref score, you know, and people get graded, yeah, on their, like, I think that should be the same way for media, you know. When you
My favorite moment.
Something that's dumb.
Moment of the day.
You ask a dumb question, out.
My Death favorite panels. Was I was watching Adam Scott. I think somebody from the Australian press, I don't know who, like, asked him, like, you know, said he was almost, he'd be almost unbeatable, right? He's, let's just let him right into it. He goes, like, if you make a couple putts, you're almost unbeatable, right? So what's Scott supposed to say? Like, yes, I am unbeatable? I don't know. You know, it's just, you know, pretty leading question.
It's, well, before we got sidetracked.
Yeah.
So, well, we're talking about Rom.
Yo, well, let's say next guy, who do you guys think next guy to win a major of this young crop? I'm going to leave my boy Westy, who's going to get it done this week, out of it. But everybody out, the younger guys, who's going to get it done first? You know, JT, Ricky, Rom, Hideki.
Stricker? you said short straight hitters this week. It's good short games.
That's true.
I'm sticking with Rom. Just, I know that's like we just went over it, but he seems like the most unburdened by things. I don't know if it's like just, you know, culture change. He doesn't, you know, he seems pretty embedded in American culture, I should say. But like, I don't know. It just, this is kind of just looking at intangibles and, you know, trying to discern something that may not be there. But he just doesn't seem burdened by the same kind of like hype and pressure, and it just doesn't seem to affect him in a way that some of the other young major list guys look like they start clenching up.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think my power rankings, I think, would be like Rom, Ricky, Matsuyama, I think. And Matsuyama last just because I don't know.
What
I mean,
about
like,
JT?
I don't know. Maybe. I keep riding my JT and Jimmy Walker have the same game narrative.
That's so
which you think is a bad take. But,
so horrible. They couldn't be, like, Jimmy Walker is the guy that like grinded his way to the PGA Tour at age 32. And
I didn't say they have the same arc. I said they have the same
21.
Game. This is what happens when all my takes get bastardized because you're not listening to what I'm saying. But Matsuyama, I think the knock on him is always his putting and like, you know, if he puts, he's one of those guys that like can finish first or second with kind of negative strokes gained putting. This has happened a couple times. And like, I don't know. I mean, I think these majors just like completely expose that in every way. So I think him winning, you know, at Phoenix is a lot different than him winning at Erin Hills, feels like.
That's a good point.
How's that for you? Is that
guy?
Okay take?
Who's your guy, Andy?
I'm
He's
all
just chucking him from the cheap seats.
I'm all in on the
they
thumb.
Can stand.
I'm all in on the thumb long term. That's John Rahm for those of you not in the know.
For the uninitiated.
But I'd say Rahm for like the long term arc. I think I kinda like Ricky. Even I'm not a huge Ricky fanboy, but I just love the way he's playing this year. Like, the thing that he's done so well this year is putt. And I know everybody says putting doesn't matter, but he's having, like, the best year of his career, and he's, like, top 5 or 10 in strokes gained putting after being 40th or something like that the year before. And, you know, if you chart it out, that's the one thing that's really taken a big jump. And he's been, I feel like he's been in the hunt at every big golf tournament that he's played in. So I think Ricky is most likely, I wouldn't be surprised if Rom won though. You know, like people are like,
yeah, I don't think you'd be surprised by any of these guys.
I had somebody chirping at me about not having Rom in my sleepers article. And I'm like,
it's like the number 9 player in the world. Isn't
yeah. It's like,
can we talk about another sleeper real quick? Rory? No, just real quick. So, like, you're talking about how he's been stuck or whatever on 5. Chamblee was also saying before I came over here to this pod that, like, this is his best opportunity to win since, like, the 15 Open at St. Andrews, which, you know, he didn't play because of that kickabout. what do you think, like, obviously Quill Hall is going to be a big opportunity. Like, do you think he's, like, got to do this week and or August? It seems like, I don't know, the farther you get out, does that just kind of amplify?
What do you think, TJ?
I don't know. I mean, I think his I don't know, expectations. I mean, like, the cliche is going to be the expectation is to win every week. But, like, at the same time, he hasn't played, what, in, like, 6 weeks because he's been hurt. I mean, I don't think he's going to be, like, win or die this week, I don't think, by any stretch. Yeah. But, I mean, I think that – I see what you're saying, that, like, if, you know, he keeps going to all these venues where everybody's saying, like, you should win, right? You should win. You should win. And he goes to the Masters, and they're like, why don't you win here? This is crazy. But, like, eventually that has to – it has to kind of feel like you've never done it before after so long. I mean, if he gets to – you know, if he gets to the 2019 U.S. Open or whatever, and he hasn't won a – you know, he hasn't – or I guess it'd be the PGA, the 2019 PGA, and he hasn't won in 5 years. Like, 5 years is a long time. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think – I do think he'll get one of these before then, but I think if he doesn't, like – yeah, I think what you're saying is got to be a factor that, like, it's got to kind of start to creep in.
I think the other thing that goes unnoticed, it doesn't get talked about that much, is, like, how much better the depth of talent is now than when it was, like, even 3 years ago. Jordan Spieth was, you know, just getting started. Like, Dustin Johnson wasn't this Dustin Johnson. Jason Day wasn't this Jason Day. Hideki Matsuyama wasn't here. And you still have Adam Scott, Sergio, all these guys playing at a high level. Westwood. All right, that's the last one I'm going to stop. No, I promise I won't do that again. But you have all these guys that are still playing at, like, a high level that are that generous. Justin Rose. We're in this era where, like, it's really, really, really hard to win.
Well,
a major.
Well, go back to, like, I mean, who was the last kind of, like, quote unquote dud major winner? It just doesn't happen. Like, it's not like you're gonna.
Danny Willis just playing himself.
Yeah, but I mean, he was still, like, number 15 in the world or something like that when he won. I mean, he's super good.
Yeah.
like I get what you're saying, but, like, you know, when was the last, like, I'm trying to think. You know, Darren Clark is not, like, swooping in and winning another major right now. Or anybody, or, like, you know, who else kind of before that? I mean, even, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. I mean, I know we went through a stretch where it was kind of like, it was Keegan and it was Webb and it was some of these guys that, like, kind of looked like they would be around forever. And, you know, it just pans out that, like,
Duffner was in there. You know, yeah. He's got a good shot this week, actually, though.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. But the point being, like, it, for any of those guys to win outside the top 10. Now, I mean, this is, like, the most obvious statement ever, but, like, for any of those guys to win, I mean, you've got to be, and this goes into a whole other thing that, like, you can kind of extrapolate out on the whole Tiger thing as well, but you didn't think we were going to bring him up, but that you can bring out with Tiger too, is, like, in order for, like, anybody who says, like, oh, I think he can get it back and he can win a major. It's like, okay, cool. That sounds great. But just FYI, like, he's got to beat Ricky and Dustin and Jason Day and Rahm and Rory and Spieth and Adam Scott and Justin Rose, like, all of these guys, like, on the same week. Like, yeah. It's just so crazy to think about it like that.
I think that this brings up, you know, so you have your young guys that are trying to get there first, and then you've got this kind of class of superstar that are kind of, you know, that somewhat have separated themselves just because of this one major, you know, where you have, you know, in Spieth has two, but all these other guys have one, but have shown, like, I think DJ, Spieth, Day, and Rory, those four have shown that they can dominate golf for, like, an 18-month stretch, which nobody else has been able to do. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have these guys that played in the shadow of Tiger, where you have Sergio, Justin Rose, Henrik Stenson, you know, Jim Furyk to a certain extent, all who have one major. And, like, you know, the when you think about remembering players, you have, you know, one major guys to two major guys. And that's a big difference, or three major guys. So, who of that group could you see getting one more major and maybe one this week?
I mean, Adam Scott's like the main one that sticks out, I feel like.
Yeah.
I mean, Sergio's probably a pretty easy answer there. I mean, I think he's still like on,
Doesn't it
he's
feel like that was like 5 years ago that he won the Masters?
Yeah, I actually wrote that today. I was like, it feels like, yeah, 5 years ago.
I don't know if I've ever seen like a Masters champion seemingly fly under the radar more
Yeah,
than
right. Yeah,
Sergio
for
is doing
real.
right now. I don't know
Especially
if
at like a better fitting golf course. Right,
like yeah,
right.
uneven lies like
Yeah.
it's like it is made like that's a guy that if you look at strokes gained driving, he can rip it far, but for the most part, he's so such a great driver that he has the ball on the string. He might not miss a fairway for, he could probably go 27 holes without missing a fairway out here, which is interesting. But, it's because Steve Stricker's eating up all the headlines.
I hope he plays well this week. That'd be so fun.
I'm kind
Yeah.
of on team Niebrugge this week, the other
Oh, yeah.
Wisconsin.
I wanted to ask you that. Just kind of, there's like a pretty strong AM crop here this week, between whatever Dalkey and Big Hag and
Slenderman.
McNealy, and I don't know. I heard this Niebrugge's like, knows the course better than anybody else, it sounds like, and has
Well,
won and played there. So it seems like you think AMs could, I don't know, not win it, but there seems like there's a lot of firepower. Didn't he almost
Niebrugge's a
win?
pro
He was in
now.
like the last group at the AM or at
Oh yeah,
Europe,
Niebrugge
right?
is a pro. Yeah, right. He's on
But
Mackenzie Tour,
yeah,
right?
he won on the Mackenzie Tour 2 weeks ago, and then or no, he came in second to McCoy when he won. But
Yeah,
he came
that's
in
right.
sixth. He could play well. You never know. But I mean, he was a two-time Walker Cupper, but the AMs are incredible. Joaquin Neiman, this kid from
Yeah.
Chile, he's the new number one in the world amateur. He overtook McNealy, who if I rated out the amateurs, like I think McNealy would probably be like four or five on the list, which is crazy because
Yeah.
he's like the golden boy. But like the a couple that won't get a lot of headlines are John Oda from UNLV, who's going to definitely be on the Walker Cup team, and Cameron Champ, who I guess I don't know if this is a fit. He's transferring from to Texas A&M to Texas next
Breaking
year.
news.
Yeah,
Oh, man.
I'm not sure if it's been reported, but
Gonna be a message board war with Tex Ag.
yeah, I know.
Orange Bloods.
Podcast is going to get tons of hits at minute 40 or whatever it is. But he,
All of a sudden, your account's gonna be hacked by Big Aggie.
uh,
Gonna take a break from the Tom Herman recruiting trail to get on
Kyle,
Andy.
Kyle Porter might be, diving in from Oklahoma State. There might be some golf fans on there. And Sooner Nation just, or not, and Cowboy Nation coming at me. But the thing about Champ, he murders the ball. Like he hits it forever. So that's a guy that, one day somebody will see how far he hits it and it'll go viral on Twitter,
Yeah.
Whoa, he hit it 380 yards.
Speaking of which, just slip in and mention that I want to get your reaction to your boy Tom Peters this week. Heard his name bandied about a little bit.
I he didn't he just didn't come I don't know why. I just didn't get on him this week. Paulie's been giving me a lot of shit about not being banging the Thomas Peters drum, and I don't know why I'm not. He's a great driver, hits it forever and awesome with the irons. So, yeah. I mean,
But
like
who's gonna be low Illini this week?
corrupted by the blade collar mafia, though, fortunately.
That could be, he might have gotten too mainstream for me.
That's true.
Low Illini is going to be Peters. I think
Yeah.
there's only two, right? Stricker and him.
Probably. I think so.
You know what bugs me about Stricker? I like the guy. I love him. He went to
Illinois. About some about time somebody goes off on this guy.
He went to
You're just Illinois. The guy to do it.
Well, he went to Illinois, but every time you see him in pictures, he's wearing like a Wisconsin gear. It's like,
yeah.
What the hell, man? You didn't go to Wisconsin. You went to Illinois.
The regular, it's a very Zach Johnson move. He didn't go to Iowa.
Side note, I did a radio interview with an Iowa radio station today, and like just we're hitting the usual, wow. you know, DJ Speed, you know, all this stuff. Rory, how's everybody gonna do? And they sign off, and they ask me like about Zach Johnson, and how he's been like struggling, why we think he's struggling, and with this new equipment. I was like, man, I don't have notes on Zach Johnson. I'm sorry, like I just threw some cliches. I usually handle these radio things fine, but threw me for a loop. All right, back to your Stricker beef with
no, that's Madison. It. That's Red. It. But yeah, then Illinois will be playing Wisconsin, and he's wearing like Wisconsin stuff, and you're like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah, that's crooked.
Yeah, it's about time. Yeah, it's about time someone called him out for that. Way to take a stand. Take a stand. Stand up to Stricker.
All right, let's get into some Twitter questions here. We got a ton of good ones. You know, we'll stay away from the ones that are directed at the spicy curmudgeon, unless we just want Porath to sit in and answer them as if he was Tron.
I don't think it's possible for anyone to be a proxy for Tron.
Heavy lies the crowd.
Geronimo Jackson wants to know, is the USGA woke?
I feel like I don't know. We haven't talked about this one. I don't know where you guys are going to fall on this, but I'll kick it off and say that I think they are woke. Some of this, of course, probably depends on your definition of the word, but in my definition, I think I think you look at kind of their body of work. I think what they did with Chambers Bay recently, I think what they pulled off with Pinehurst, I think what they're doing with Aaron Hills, I think from a just different kind of venue, I think they're way woker than the public is ready for. That's why I think you saw a lot of backlash, which I loved. All the, like, this golf course is brown. Some of that coming from the current president of the United States. people not understanding like the motives behind something, that's like the wokest thing there is, when like somebody doesn't understand your art, I think is great. I think sometimes they're woke and not woke at the same time. I think you look at their handling of the Jungle Bird situation, which on one hand, you know, belittling forest agent of the rainforest is very unwoke. But at the same time, Mike Davis actually being the guy who yanked him off camera, when your head honcho is also strong arming people, I think that's very woke.
Literally
woke. Yeah, just super woke. I think that, man, what else? I mean, I think the anchored putter decision was pretty unwoke.
The consequence that the ball and distance hasn't increased was extremely not woke.
Yeah, but some of it's so not woke that it might be woke. You know what I mean?
That's like when you said, if nobody stinks, does everybody stink?
I think the spicy curmudgeon said that.
So, all right, I'm not going to back that up. Do you have anything behind, you know, I feel like DJ really... Has dived into that.
Wow, undisputed.
Yeah,
wokeness aficionado.
Yeah, I think I think they're woke. I got a great question from Joe Mayberry for Porath here. Early bets on how many awful versions of red, white, and blue apparel we see this week.
Oh, it's already out. You know, it's just these. It's so heinous. It's so wrong. It's like just kind of like, you know, they're trying to appeal this, you know, this low-hanging fruit, and it's just really this, I don't know, it's this base and kind of, I don't know, really discouraging, you know, false sense of patriotism. It's just like an easy sell for commercial reasons, you know. It's just everybody's got to release the bag, everybody's got to release the shoes, the outfits, you know. Why does Sergio have to be in red, white, and blue? He's from Spain. I mean, I know he's, you know, big Texas now. He's like big Tex or whatever. But, you know, I don't understand why we got to drape Sergio in red, white, and blue. It's just this, like, commercial kind of, you know, hollow commercial attempt at, you know, trying to capture on people's patriotism.
Yeah, I don't like the brands getting involved in my issues.
Right, exactly. You know?
Keep your brands off my issues.
Let it be an organic decision to represent yourself. Patriot, yeah. Right there.
I wish players still picked what they wore. You know, like, who'd be wearing the blade collar voluntarily?
No, I got a buddy that just Jason bought one. Day that loves it.
Jason Day would do that. Your buddy loves it?
He loves it. Yeah, we make fun of him constantly. He played golf with Tron the other day, and Tron just mercilessly was like, dude, the blade collar's got to go. He's like, no, it's good. He just kept popping Tron right back in the face about it. It was admirable.
Actually, the blade collar is good.
All right. Here's another question from Will Knight. What is more likely? Kuchar snakes his way to a top 10 in a major that doesn't suit his game, or an actual snake attacks Kevin Na?
Yeah, a lot of moving parts on that one.
I will say this. I'm surprised that a snake didn't attack Kevin Na when he spent like an hour making a 19 in San Antonio that one year.
16, I believe. What was what about the golf course doesn't fit Kuchar's game?
I was going to ask that.
I think it's in a major. Like, I actually, like, when
I think
I
he
saw
was just
this...
going heavy on the snake pun there, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
Which I respect.
trying to shoehorn his narrative into, you know, yeah. question.
I actually think Kuchar's a guy that could play well.
When yeah,
you
why not?
Right. Like, a shorter hitter that hits it really straight and is a really good iron player. Like, that is him. Kuch might be somebody that's really flying under the radar. Let's see what else we got here. Whose career? Steve Stricker or Jim Furyk?
Oh man. Who did this question come from?
Ken Ryan from Milwaukee. Sure.
Oh well, that's what I was gonna get at, because I was like, I don't think that this feels like a very biased question. I don't even think it's close, right? Like,
no. Furyk, FedEx Cup and a
Furyk 7-6 at least.
All right. Here's a good one, and I promise I wouldn't
let the biases show through.
I wouldn't bring this up. I promised earlier, but this question is so good from the Tour Saucier. How many putts inside 3 feet will Westy miss?
Ooh. Well, that's the thing. If they get some rain, maybe some of that spice will be taken out of the greens. I don't know. I mean, I'll take the over, whatever the number is. I'll let you set it, but I'm going to take the over.
I'm going to say he's going to have a great week. He's going to have less than 4 misses, less than 1 around.
Yeah. I just remember watching him last year with DJ. He was just like a fan. Him and like Billy Foster were just there to like run interference with the USGA. Like, he was ejected by like the 7th hole. So it literally served no purpose out there. He's like a marker. Just running interference on the USGA. Felt bad for him.
You know, I've got
some very incriminating text from Andy that I'm going to roll out when the time is appropriate. Feels kind of like the alleged Comey tapes that I've got on. I'm going to roll them out there right at the right time. So you guys follow me on Twitter at DJ Pie if you want to see some of this stuff come out. He's not always cracked. Andy's not always cracked up to me.
You know, I was rolling through last year's Open on Wikipedia, and it had, like, you know, the all the leaders cards, and at the bottom it was Westwood's, and it was just, it was ugly to look at. But I really think Westwood could play well here, you know?
I think he will too, actually. I'm a little nervous about it. Again, the point still stands that, like, I do not see a universe in which he wins, but I do think he'll play well.
Yeah.
You know, so we got our, we'll kick off overrated, underrated. We got our first write-in. And back to Westwood, I was already onto this, but maybe a 36-hole leader bet would be good for Westwood.
Yeah, totally. But again, that's not the point. That's not what started this whole thing. Like, I think he could take the 36-hole lead at every tournament he plays. That's not the issue. You keep ducking the real issue.
We'll see what happens on Sunday.
We will.
All right. Overrated, underrated. And Barry W. coming in hot with a write-in, overrated, underrated. I love that, you know?
The NLU merch czar.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to know the USGA, overrated, underrated.
Ooh, well, I'm going to go back to my original point and say underrated. I think there's a lot of look. They in a tournament that should be like one of the least exciting, you know, just based on kind of like fireworks and you know, fun stuff happening on the golf course. It should kind of be the least exciting thing, and it's always like the most exciting week. It's awesome, and I think that's because of them.
I think they know what they're doing. As someone who bathes himself in content every day, it's good for content. You know, they just 1 week a year. You can't take this every week, but I think they know what they're doing. Underrated.
All right, and then he gave us a bunch of them here.
Okay, great.
All right.
The Thumbs nickname.
Very underrated. Drastically underrated.
The Thumbs chances.
Shout out to Big Randy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Thumb is Jon Rahm, for anybody that's made it this far that doesn't know who the Thumb is.
It's the stroke of genius by Big Randy.
The Thumbs chances this week.
Can Jon Rahm win? It was a joke. Okay. Yes, he could definitely win.
Are they overrated or underrated?
I'm going to say slightly overrated. And I'm going to say that because, like, I know he won at Torrey Pines. And so, I mean, it's not like he's, you know, not going to win. But the last couple times I think he's gotten in contention, he's been running a little too hot, I think. And he just, like, it's been kind of a bad look.
NoLineUp.com exposed his thoughts on the Central Ohio fitness regimen. He's not a fan.
And that was even on, like, Thursday. I mean, like, the match play where, like, he looked like he couldn't lose, he came out in that match against DJ and just, like, pressed way too hard or something and just was making these mistakes he wasn't making all week. I think that stuff just, like, takes time to get comfortable with, I'm sure.
Yeah, I agree. Somewhat, you know. I don't know. I think he hits it so good and drives it so well and putts pretty well and his iron so well. It's, you know, it's going to be a very rare week when he's not in contention, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see. I think the big thing with Rahm is starting to cash in more, you know?
Yeah.
But he's still so young. And then, you know, I came up with some overrated and underrated. Moving on from Big Bear. All right.
From the freelance.
Brats.
Ooh, just bratwursts?
Yeah.
Underrated.
Overrated.
You think overrated?
Yeah, I think like the ratio of finding a good brat, like when you find a good one that's been cooked properly for low and slow, it's like, you know, it exceeds anything else that you know could do on a grill. But like, you, it's so rare to find them. I think it's just a lot of riffraff too often. Overrated.
Wow. Okay.
So.
Yeah. That's a fair take. I'm still gonna say underrated. I think that a lot of people poo-poo them a little bit too much without really giving them the due course. But yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan.
We'll go with I would say with Bratz, I'm gonna go with my uncle. If he was listening to this, he would hate it, but I'm gonna say they're overrated. You know, it could be my proximity to the Wisconsin border, but, you know, like, you know, I was at Aaron Hills on Sunday, and, you know, this very, very nice Wisconsin volunteer, like, rolled up on me and was like, you gotta try one of these brats. They're the best things ever, you know? You know, I noticed that with a lot of things. Have you ever noticed how people, like, will just be like, this is the best burger ever, or this is the best red wine ever? It's like, what does that even mean?
It's like, yeah. People have no capacity for context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
what's the best what's the best Wisconsin thing? See, in general. I love Wisconsin, by the way. I'm like,
I'm in
more than anywhere else. Oh, way in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I'd like a little microbrew up there, Miller Lite.
Big yeah. Fan. Totally.
Like, it's I'm just totally underrated. It's got mainstream, you know. There's a mass-produced beer.
Blue Ribbon Award winner that comes out of there that I really like, too.
Let me tell you, drinking in Milwaukee, like, going to Milwaukee for a night out, if yeah. like, you're looking for somewhere that you can just go have a great time, Milwaukee.
Oh, it's awesome. My brother went to Marquette. Done that plenty of times. It's great.
Heard great things.
Yeah. To go out, that might be one of the best things about Wisconsin. But their golf is really good, too. Very, yeah. Very, very underrated. The thing is that everybody looks at, you know, Aaron Hills and now Sand Valley and Kohler. But Lasonia is like the hidden gem of the golf world. It's like this fantastic golden age golf course that is just so good, and for some reason it's probably because they don't pay any magazine to cover them, but they just go unnoticed, like, and they get overlooked time after. It's so good, you know. I'd rather
subtweet there.
I'd rather play there than Whistling Straits.
Yeah,
so that's my Wisconsin delight. Lasonia is the most underrated thing about Wisconsin.
Great.
You guys got any overrated, underrated?
Can I throw
you had this
out,
great list.
Get thrown out there? Because yeah. This is like, you know, the week of Pro Tracer. Pro Tracer, overrated or underrated? Actually, sorry. It's now Top Tracer. I don't know if you knew that. They're
right.
In bed with...
Purchased the technology.
Yeah, in bed with big parlor games. Top Golf. Top Tracer.
Man,
overrated or underrated?
That just might have swayed my answer.
I am, yeah, that's right. Or no, Tron's the one that hates Top Golf. So this is one of those things that, like, I think, you know, everybody has a tendency to, like, freak out about, you know, to kind of latch on to this one thing and just adopt it as, like, their rallying cry, you know. And I feel like Pro Tracer kind of seems like that, where everybody, like, it's something that, you know, people start talking about, and then everybody just loses their shit about, like, oh, we need it more, we need it more, we need it more.
Yeah.
And it, like, seems like it loses its punch, but I totally disagree, and I think we do need it more, and I literally can't get enough. Like, it just, Bacon was talking about it last week, and I mean, it's like watching it'd be like watching football, like, without the first down line when you could have it. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It just, like, totally changes everything. And, like, it changes everything for the announcers. It changes everything for, like, you know, rather than just, like, kind of watching the ball, like, shoot out to the right of the player because the cameraman's kind of slightly to the right. Like, you know, it just gives the whole thing just so much more depth and context. Like, the perfect example was Dustin last year on 18. his second shot that he hit, like as soon as it left the club face, like you knew it was right at the flag, and then you're just like, there's just that much more anticipation building because you know it's going right at it, rather than like, you know, just kind of waiting to guess and go into the wide shot and just kind of seeing where it lands. Like, I don't know. Again, rambling answer, but like, I'm all in. Underrated. Somehow.
It's underrated until they start putting on chips.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, you know what's underrated? Speaking of putting on chips, was Golf Channel would do the, I think it was like, it was sponsored by one of the financial advisory firms, like whoever has the green line, is that like TD Ameritrade or something?
Yeah, one of those.
And
yeah.
They were doing, for like a long time, they were doing like the putt projection line.
I remember
like
that.
Like before they putted, that was the coolest, that's like the coolest aspect of the broadcast that never gets used anymore. And just like watching the ball like actually follow that line, and like as soon as it wavers from it, it misses. Like that was awesome. I love that.
I'm with you. It's underrated. It's just like a ubiquitous and obvious take that, you know, kind of, you know, ruins it for everybody. But yes, you can never have enough of it. It's
I think great. without all the content about it, it would be, you know, right. So much more underrated about it.
Yeah, this is my first Fox broadcast I'll watch. I'm pretty pumped to see it. I'm
really pumped. Yeah, Bacon was telling us about all the tricks they got up their sleeve. It's gonna be really cool.
What a company, man. Just pumping influencers like DJ Pi up.
That's right. Right. Exactly. I'm like one of his surrogates.
just sitting here spewing the Fox message.
No, it's gonna be great, man. That was like one of those it was what kind of the thing everybody lost their mind about the first year was like, you know, everything that they got wrong was like such a small thing that was like such an easy fix. And like, if you just looked at like the bones of what they had, it was clear that like they were gonna get so much better so quickly. And like last year's broadcast was awesome.
Like getting Greg Norman out of the booth just
wasn't great.
Immediate Joe fix.
Fuck, overrated, underrated. Ooh,
this is a tough one. I almost say he's underrated because of how much people hate him.
I don't get why people hate him. Yeah. I'm all in on it. I like, love it.
I like him. I think he's underrated because of, like Andy said, all the like Twitter. Everyone thinks he hates their team. It's just ridiculous.
I don't know. I go back and forth because sometimes he just annoys the crap out of me. Yeah. I mean, I am a Cubs and Bears fan. And he is a Cardinals and Packers fan. Like, those are known things. So, like, literally when he does games, he's rooting against my team. But, that being said...
Well, I'm an Indians fan, and everyone in Cleveland thought, like, was, you know, he and Kyle Schwarber had an inappropriate relationship, and we just had to weed through all that stuff.
It's funny because...
Nonstop. He hates our team. He hates the Indians.
Everybody in Chicago said the same thing about the Indians.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of unbelievable.
People always say he's smug or whatever, and I think what really resonates with me is just kind of his, like, he's always got this like kind of nihilism about the fact that like sports don't really matter all that much, which just speaks like directly to my soul. And I love watching it. Just everything he says is just kind of like, oh my gosh, what an impossibly huge moment this is. And it's like, it's just all dripping with sarcasm. It feels like, I love it. I'm all in on that.
All right. Well, out on Joe Buck, I think we'll wrap it here.
Do we want to make predictions or no?
Yeah, sure. Make your prediction.
I already said Spieth. I'm in on Spieth. I just want to hear who you like when you distill it down to one name.
I was gonna say Spieth. Let me
go. No, you to the can take Spieth. No, you can take Spieth. Go for it.
I don't know.
Drink the numbers.
Crunch the numbers. How about Rosie for second US Open?
Yeah, I love that.
I'm sitting, you know, telling you how much I like Spieth all week, DJ, and then you just take my pick right from me.
Yeah.
And now what exactly. am I supposed to do? So I'll go
Westy.
I mean, I'll take. Who would you take, Dustin or Spieth, straight up?
I'd take Spieth, but I'll take Dustin. That's who I'm gonna pick for my one and done because I already burned Spieth, so I'll take Dusty. Yeah.
All right. There you have it.
Hey, what are we betting on this Westy Leishman? I kind of really like Leishman this week too.
I like Leishman this week too. I think it's gonna be a good bet. I think just let it roll.
$20.
The standard bet.
All right. Just be expecting a Venmo.
Yeah, exactly.
From me.
Yep.
All right,
guys.
Hey,
enjoyed it.
Pora, thanks for coming on. You're an admirable, if not superior, replacement to the spicy curmudgeon.
All right,
I could never fill that void, but appreciate you having me on.